What does it take to help a student get to graduation success? Hello, I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're discussing the recently released Enhancing Student Performance, Learning, and Performance Statewide Survey. What has the most impact on student performance? What can parents do to help? What can all of us as community members do regardless of whether we have school-age kids? Most of the problems the survey highlights are not new or surprising, but perennial struggles remain. How can we change the numbers so more kids make it to a bright future? We'll discuss these issues today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Providence Imaging Center with Drs. Scott Nespinski and Christopher Reed, providing interpretations of imaging studies with a focus on musculoskeletal radiology, provimaging.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello. Thanks for joining us for an important discussion about the future of Alaska's youth. Most of us have heard the expression, it takes a village to raise a child. But what does that mean? What are the proper roles for teachers, students, parents, and community members? Why do we keep seeing the same struggles year after year? Joining me to discuss the Enhancing Student Learning and Performance Statewide Survey and what we may want to consider for future education success are Andrew Helcrow, the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, the organization that commissioned the study, and June Sobosinski, vice president of community action for the United Way. Good morning.
Good morning, Lori.
Do I have your title correct, June? Is that right? Vice President for Community Action?
Well, it's shifted in the last 6 months, and actually now I have a particular focus on education impact. So that's the new title.
Okay, well, I'm sorry that I should have asked about that before we went to air. So, okay, thank you. And good morning, Andrew Helcrow. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Let's start with a basic question. Why is the Chamber of Commerce and United Way surveying teachers about what's going on at school?
Well, we think it's very important. And of course, we have the 90% by 2020 effort that's been ongoing for the last 8 years. In just a correction, because I think this is important, the Anchorage Chamber in the United Way, we didn't commission the study. And what happened was about a year ago, when I got hired at the Anchorage Chamber, I met with June and Michelle Brown and said, okay, the Chamber needs to do some advocacy. And so we picked two areas. We picked education and diversity. So we started working down this process, and we got a couple of months into it, and we started talking about kind of the formation and how we would grow the structure of 90% by 2020. And one thing that was really lacking was data. We knew anecdotally that there were these issues out there, and we'd hear different comments. So what we did was actually in July, June and I attended a meeting that was called by the NEA. And our feeling was, look, you can't address the education issues without talking to the people who are on the ground every day seeing the students come in the door. And so we sat down with NEA, and the first thing both June and I said was, okay, we can't talk about funding. We can't talk about money. We can't talk about increasing the BSA, because both the Anchorage Chambers of Commerce's board and United Way's board had not taken a position. And so we did not want to step out in front of our boards. So what we did was we came to an agreement with the NEA that we wanted to do this study on what the teachers are seeing, you know, quality of life, all of these other things. And they agreed. And we made the point that, look, we need to start working together. We need to get past these stereotypes and these silos that people are working in. And at that time, the NEA had been working with Northern Economics for the previous 8 months, trying to decide what type of a survey they were going to do. And so what ended up happening was the NEA said, okay, we'll fund it, but you figure it out. You create the study. So we created an independent steering committee, created the questions. We collaborated with Northern Economics. They executed the study and tabulated the results.
June, before I turn to you, I want to make sure that people know they can also join our conversation. This is a call-in program. You can join us at, if you're out of the Anchorage area, the number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or locally 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Do you have a story about how you helped a child successfully navigate 12 years of school? Or are you a community member who helps with before or after school programs to assist students? Give us a call and give us your thoughts if you've seen the survey results or read articles about it. June, give us some perspective about the United Way's involvement in this study.
Well, as Andrew laid out, our Anchorage community is really deeply interested in the outcomes of our children. And from United Way's perspective, we believe there's an incredibly rich opportunity for the community to look at this holistically. And we believe that that's our role. Our United Way's role is to try to mobilize that engagement. And kind of going back a little bit to what Andrew was talking about, you know, we want to be able to look at data, and we want it to be representative of various perspectives. You know, historically, our conversations around schools and educational outcomes for our children have really engaged, state-level education officials, unions, legislators. But we believe that the answers don't all lie there and that we need really good data. And I kind of bucket the data in three ways. There is local data we should take a good, hard look at, you know, the actual numbers of how kids are doing in various ways, and look at it with some rigor and with some analysis and rationality, not just cherry-picking pieces and parts, but looking at the whole package. So that's one bucket. Another bucket of important information is research, national research that guides what helps and what doesn't. And the third bucket is informed opinion. And that's where this survey comes in. So what are the frontline workers with our children in schools saying? What are the teachers saying that they're seeing? And what are households and citizens saying, parents, and even folks whose children are long gone and grown and not even in the schools anymore, but what are they saying? So our belief at United Way is that we need to bring all those voices to the table, and we need to have in this state a really intelligent, rational conversation using all those levels of data and come together to help our kids. It's not just the job of the schools, and it's not just a decision that lawmakers should make. We all need to be engaged.
1-800-478-8255 or 550-8422 in the Anchorage area if you'd like to join our conversation. To my mind, there really weren't a lot of surprises in the findings. Attendance, proper rest and nutrition, a stable home life were among the top reasons for why students did or did not have success. Andrew, when you read the results, what was your reaction?
My reaction was, excuse me, my reaction was that it confirmed most of our thoughts. I mean, you look at underperforming schools and underperforming students, and there's a reason there. There's a reason why South Anchorage High School has a graduation rate of 92%. In my old alma mater, East High School has a graduation of 75%. On the surface, we recognize that a lot of that was driven by Anchorage becoming a more international city, some of the schools in Anchorage having a more diverse population, more complex to educate because of all kinds of things. For instance, English is a second language or other socioeconomic barriers. So what the report did is as you said, it basically confirmed what we've been hearing. But what the study did provide is a view of the pipeline of students entering in K and leaving in 12. So the survey was structured so we took what elementary teachers saw And then we reconciled that with what middle school teachers saw, and then we reconciled that with what high school teachers saw. So you can see throughout the pipeline the various trends, and it's absolutely amazing. And the trends actually give insight to public policies that need to address kind of these soft spots along the pipeline where we believe students are disengaging from school and not graduating.
And June, as I said before, the results to my mind weren't very surprising, that we need to make sure kids get a good night's sleep and that they're getting a good dinner before they go to bed and a good breakfast before they head off to school, that they have time for proper study, and that there's a supportive home life. I raised two sons through public school, and all of those things were very important. And you could see the results, whether they had school rest or did not for whatever reason. What was your reaction when you saw what the study found?
I agree that it wasn't surprising in many ways. I think the talking about the teacher survey, they're seeing what's happening when kids come into school and or what's not happening. And one of the main things that they rose up as a concern or an issue was the effect of absence, the effect of chronic absence. And, Andrew mentioned our local partnership here in Anchorage, the 90 by 2020 partnership, and I'm just going to give you one little example of how that plays out. When you look at data and when you look at research and how this informed opinion plays into and sort of substantiates what we're starting to see. When we analyze something like eighth grade math proficiency in the Anchorage School District, and you look at the data, you look at the local data of the kids that are not doing well there, and you look back, what was happening to those kids prior? The big trends that you see, it do include infrequent attendance. So, and that just makes logical sense, and that's what the data also shows you. There's a lot of research, too, that says if a child hasn't gotten through a level of math, which is Algebra 1, by the time they're out of middle school, their likelihood of going on to college and being successful is just much, much lower. And, of course, now we have the informed opinion of our teachers saying, guess what? Chronic absence is a huge problem mm-hmm. in terms of educational outcomes. And our local data analysis was showing the kiddos that weren't doing well in math in eighth grade, guess what? Weren't attending too much in sixth and seventh grade. So maybe we should put a little focus on attendance. So these things are not at all surprising. But what's really fascinating from me, from sort of like a party is interested in really not so much reforming education, but improving education, using data to improve the results for our kids, is looking at all these pieces and seeing them come together so coherently. And this is the kind of process that we want to see at our local level and our state level.
1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide if you'd like to join our conversation today. We're discussing the Enhancing Student Learning and Performance Statewide Survey. 1-800-478-8255 or locally 550-8422 is the number to call. So this survey sort of kind of crystallizes what the problems are. They're the same as when I was a kid in school. You've got to be there if you're going to get this education and be able to really take it in and have success with it. In your assessment, what needs to happen to better address these chronic problems? Is that the next step that needs to be looked at now in some survey form, perhaps?
When you look at, as I mentioned earlier, when you look at the trends, one of the things that consistently shows up in elementary, middle school, and high school is the lack of student preparedness. And what you see as the student moves that through the pipeline is when students start behind, it compounds itself. So when you look at the data in elementary school, I believe it's 20% teachers. The survey shows 20% of the kids are affected by showing up for school not prepared, and then you get into middle school and it rises to 24%, and then high school it goes up to 25 or 26%. So you can see as a student moves through the pipeline that starting behind, it's very difficult to catch up, and that's why what we've done with the 90% by 2020 is we've picked really three markers, third grade reading, eighth grade math, graduation readiness, because you have to address the weak points in the pipeline. And one of the things that became evident was not only the lack of student preparedness, which I would argue is because this state does not have a comprehensive pre-K program. I mean, you have 50% of the kindergartners that show up in the Anchorage School District do not test where they should be testing. They are showing up kind of not on step, and that creates problems down the pipeline. But when you look at this journey, when you get into middle school, not only is it lack of student preparedness and home environment, but you start to see bullying show up in seventh and eighth grade. And we all know that seventh and eighth grade, as June said, is two of the most critical years in a student's life. I mean, those really depend whether they're on the track to graduate or they're in kind of this danger zone. And so when you look at this data, you see the trends. You need to let the data drive the policy. So clearly teachers are seeing bullying in middle school. That's an issue that can be addressed by both school district policy and public policy.
Absolutely. June?
Andrew makes a good point on the preparedness. I want to just add a little detail around that. Using data, of course, and looking at the whole package, we know that if you look at some of the measures for kindergarten readiness, you know, when kindergartners come into our school district, they get tested in a variety of ways. Assessed is a better way just to see, you know, where they are in certain things. And for instance, if you ask kindergartners to, you know, name letters, we're finding that roughly about half of the incoming kindergartners are at a place where they're really ready, just with that one skill, right? So now they're already way behind the curve. So I think, you know, Andrew's referring to some potential public policy opportunities that we really should take a look at that, and I agree. But I also would add in there that there's really an opportunity to step it up as a community and take some ownership over these outcomes, because it isn't all up to the legislature and funding. And we have to change some social and community norms around what our expectations are for our kids and how we as a community prepare our kids, both before they get to school, you know, all the way through and then out the other side.
If I could touch on one thing you had mentioned in the opening program. About 20 years ago, you know, the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, started being thrown around and people recoiled. Oh, you know, people, you know, the town doesn't need to be raising. But when you think about it, it's so true.
It is true.
Because even if you don't have children in school here in Anchorage, 45% of your local property taxes goes to fund education. So the question is, do you want a better return on that investment? Because you're already involved. I mean, you know, there's no way, whether you have kids in school or not, there is no way to disconnect if you're a homeowner. There's no way to disconnect your contribution to local schools. And so when you look at this, it does take a village, meaning you're already in this village and you're already paying.
Absolutely. And we'll talk more about that idea of the community involvement as we go forward with Talk of Alaska today. We're talking about enhancing student learning and performance, a statewide survey that was conducted during 2013 and was just recently released. My guests are Andrew Helcrow, the president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and June Sobosinski, who is the vice president of
Education Impact.
Education Impact, thank you. The number to call is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or locally 550-8422, 550-8422. And Susie is on the line from Fairbanks. She has a comment about school budget cuts. Good morning, Susie.
Hi. I guess that I was thinking not just about the budget cuts. I think it's everyone's attitude overall towards education. I think that everyone needs to be more on board. Like what you were saying, whether you have children in the school system or not, everyone needs to, you know, think more about this and think about what they can do to contribute, and also budget cuts. I think that we all hear a lot about education is very important and children are our most important resource. But yet, when I see that the budget for education has been cut again, to me, it just seems like talk. Especially if certain people who talk about education being so important, but yet they were the ones who voted to cut the budget, that really, to me, it doesn't really show that they care as much as they claim to care.
Susie, you mentioned, in addition to concerns about budgets for schools, you mentioned that it's important for the community to be involved. Do you have ideas about that? How should the community be involved in a student's education?
I think that, for one thing, maybe starting as early as fifth or sixth grade, community leaders, business owners, they could and they should go to the schools to demonstrate what's needed for certain, for certain jobs, such as, and what's required for an electrician, what's required as in training and skills, and also, other jobs that the kids may be interested in or maybe they haven't even thought of. And they should also, be in the school, to volunteer. I know that most of the time when I would go to the schools to volunteer, I don't think I ever saw anyone else besides parents, which parents absolutely should be volunteering. But I think that it would mean a lot to the kids to see somebody volunteering who's
maybe not a parent. Right.
Somebody else, who's like either a business owner, someone who the kids can really look up to, and maybe they have a job or they run a business that the kids might be interested in.
Absolutely. Thank you for those ideas. I think that's absolutely, you're spot on with the idea of community involvement and the fact that we need to get more community leaders. And this survey actually did touch on the idea of vocational style training. And I think that's what Susie was kind of alluding to, is the idea of bringing people in and saying, if you want to be an electrician or a plumber or any one of these trades where you can certainly make a great living, here's what you're going to need to know and to do. This is a little bit off the trajectory I was planning for this, but since she brought that up, and thank you for that call, Susie, what were the components that were looked at as it relates to vocational style training? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, we looked at more broader topics in the survey. But one of the things, and bear in mind, we did two things. There was a survey of 1,200 teachers around the state. So this was a statewide survey, both urban and rural. And we reconciled that against 750 Alaska households. So we got to see what the teachers thought the challenges and solutions were and what households, even those without children, thought the challenges and the solutions were. And both the teachers and the households agreed on exactly what Susie said. You have to let the students, and you have to make an effort to let the students know about that next step and about career paths. And that's incredibly important. And I just want to say one thing. While June and I take kind of an Anchorage-centric look at education, I believe this state, all of the education community has to come together. This is a large state with a small population. There are several dominant industries. So you have a state where over 92% of the kids go to public schools. And from a business, from an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce standpoint, that's 92% of our potential workforce that's coming to work for companies all over the state. And many of those companies have offices or headquarters in Anchorage. So we have to stop looking at education as a regional and more of a statewide, because students who graduate from Fairbanks might end up in Anchorage or all over the state. But getting back to her question, there is an issue with parent engagement. There's no question about it. We did a portion on, do teachers feel their schools are welcoming? Elementary is great, and then you start getting to middle and high school, and teachers feel that their schools aren't very open. And I think we need to improve on that.
Mm-hmm. June, would you like to add to that?
I want to go back really quickly to Susie's comment about sort of relevance to what comes next and work and vocational education and so forth. And as Andrew mentioned, the study bore that out and supports that notion. And in addition to the agreement between teachers and households that one of the hugest things we can do for our kids is to help them see the next step, help them see what they're learning now and its relevance to what's going to come later in terms of work or college and career. We also saw that come through when we did conversations with youth over the summer. That's something United Way did. We were trying to cull some information from various groups. And by the way, let's not forget about talking to these students. And
right.
I think we need to be doing that as well going forward in a more concerted way. And I think the 90-20-20 partnership is going to do that. But we saw a couple of real themes emerge from students. And they said a couple of things that were very meaningful. They said, what helps them be successful in school is, one, a teacher who will pay attention and support them outside the classroom. Yeah, that kind of implies that the teacher has time to do that, which relates to budget cuts. But that's a key piece. But the other key piece was that the classroom experience be relevant and meaningful to the world, to their life, to what comes next. So, you know, Susie's right on target with that. And there's plenty of opportunities to build people's involvement in coming into schools and doing that.
1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or locally 550-8422 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking about student performance and how we can all collectively, as Alaskans, help students, whether we have kids in school or not. The idea of making education relevant is so profound. I know that when I was an immature kid in school, I could not understand why history should be important to me. Now I love and completely understand the importance of knowing where we've come from and how those struggles shaped where we are today. But when I was younger and in school, I thought, well, who cares about what happened 200 years ago? I did not understand it. When my sons got in junior high, they had an excellent, wonderful history teacher who had them engage in, they dressed up in you know, the clothing of the day, of the period that they were studying, and she really helped them understand what these people were dealing with when they migrated to certain places and gave them that context of why this is important. It was fantastic. And it was actually, for me, also a great kind of a side view of how history should be taught and why making things relative to why this will help you in the future was so critical, because my sons really got it at a much earlier age than I did because they had a teacher. Now, I'm not saying that only teachers can do this, because it's important for all of us to be engaged in those things. And you mentioned talking to students, June. The report is fairly new, but you have had some conversations. Are there community engagement ideas that you're thinking about? We've got a couple minutes before we take a break here, but are there some ideas that you've started thinking about for the community to help in this regard, for helping students?
Well, I'm going to toss out something that I know is part of the process forward for our Anchorage partnership, and I think any community can do this. There's really not enough opportunities to come together and talk with one another and really listen to what's behind some of our challenges. So, for example, as Andrew mentioned, if we want to get a real focus on making sure more of our kids are ready for kindergarten, or that they're doing better with math in eighth grade, or that they are on track to graduate from high school, we have an opportunity to actually call people together and talk about that, the parents themselves and the students themselves, in sort of small group environment ways, and really listen. Because I think oftentimes the seeds of what you need to do in order to shift practices and procedures in schools and in community will emerge from those conversations. So that's something right there. And I think that's key to really unlocking some of the answers.
Mm-hmm. Is that community engagement piece is so important. We are talking about students and enhancing student learning and performance, a statewide survey that was just recently released, a very comprehensive survey, looking at what it takes to help a young person make it through school and have success for the future. As we're hearing this morning, it takes all of us. So we will continue this conversation. We'd love to take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. Whether it has to do with fishing, food, or fun, every Alaskan has a story about their connection with wild salmon. And you're invited to hear some of those stories. Introducing Salmon Voices, a new series from the Salmon Project. It features Alaska authors, photographers, and illustrators sharing their experiences with Alaska's most famed fish. New stories will be published each day, February 2nd through the 16th, on AlaskaDispatch.com. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about enhancing student learning and performance, a recent statewide survey that was released. My guests are Andrew Helcrow, president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and June Sobosinski, the vice president of Education Impact. Did I get that right, finally?
Yes, you did.
Hallelujah. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide, or 550-8422. 550-8422 is the local number. We had an email from someone who wanted to have a better understanding of what responsibility our two guests feel that schools should assume to assist students coming from dysfunctional homes or unengaged parents, especially those in financially strapped communities lacking many support systems for kids that are present in larger cities. That's something that I wanted to touch on next, actually, so this email was timely. The executive summary says teachers and households speak a different language, saying households focused on issues such as drug and alcohol abuse and domestic violence, whereas teachers focused on chronic absence, lack of support at home, poor student preparation. But really, aren't these just two sides of the same coin? This doesn't seem like a different language to me. Mr. Helcrow.
Well, when I first saw the survey results, that's kind of the place I arrived. Basically, what teachers are saying look, just get me the kids, get me them with nutrition, in a good night's sleep, in ready to learn, and we can do what we need to do. The households are saying, well, before you do that, you have to address these social problems. And really, the difference is that teachers see more of a chronic absence in home environment, and then you get into high school, they see student drug and alcohol abuse, or community alcohol and drug abuse, where the households view it more as the student outside social ills, the domestic violence, the home environment, and they peg student drug and alcohol abuse, where the teachers identify community drug and alcohol abuse. So that's a little different there, but I think the overall takeaway is that there are some points that you can look at that, from a strategy standpoint, you say, okay, we need to concentrate our efforts in elementary school, because there are kids that show up. Some kids that show up for kindergarten have a vocabulary of 5,000 words. Others have 500 words. Mm-hmm. Teachers have identified better before school and after school activities. Urban teachers feel like community programs help students a lot more than rural teachers. Rural teachers have this concern that community programs in rural Alaska are not improving or not fostering a learning environment. But I think when you look at what the schools can do, the key part is identifying those kids and deploying resources. And I really personally believe that that's what makes especially middle school counselors so important.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go to the phones again quickly. We're going to take Kathy in Juneau. She wants to comment on the role of teachers. Kathy.
Hi. I have raised three children in the city of Juneau. The youngest now is 24, works for the state, has her act together, is making really good money. All three of my children have gone to college and have graduated. Two of my children were twins, or are twins, and they had issues through school because they were the eldest children. They had their own language until they were put into preschool, but they did go to preschool. They had great kindergarten teachers. When they were in first grade, they were just tested and learned that they had learning disabilities. And basically what their learning disabilities were, where they were so smart and intelligent, we're talking points away from Mensa, that they focused in on one thing and they couldn't see the big picture. So concepts sometimes were difficult for them to see. Hmm. One of them has graduated from gunsmithing school and is very meticulous on details and things like that. The other one has graduated with a 4-year degree in animation. And very talented and that. Because they had IEPs, I had a fight definitely every year. And as I got older, it was more often like weekly or quarterly, that teachers didn't want to follow their IEPs, which were easy. You put art into their assignments, and that way you could pull out what they were learning. Teachers didn't want to do that. I had, in junior high school, I had one teacher who was a math teacher who only wanted to teach to the middle students. She didn't want to teach to the advanced students. She didn't want to teach to the lower, the students who were having issues. She would lecture. She wouldn't show them how to do it. And then when it came time for teachers' conferences, had the gall to look at me and tell me my student didn't know how to learn.
So what do you think, what's your idea for how this should be different? I mean, clearly teachers can't teach individually to each child,
No, but there was one. I have an example of how they can do that. We had in eighth grade a teacher who did not realize that my daughter was being taken out of class for IEP. I have no idea why, because he was the only IEP teacher in the junior high school that would come get my daughter. But when she told me that she was having issues in class, I asked her, did you look at her IEP? And she said, no, I didn't know she had one. And the IEP teacher about went through the roof. But at that meeting, we explained to her what her IEP was and that she needed some art in her assignments so that you can tell that she's getting what you're teaching. And she said, okay. This teacher decided she didn't want to just single out my daughter. So she did this. She took other students in the class who really liked to draw and were good at it, and she gave that group of kids one kind of assignment in history, like you were talking about history. And they read a book, and they had to give the book report in newspaper form. And in this, it was about Paul Revere. And in this, the kids all did okay, but Adara, my daughter, looked at a newspaper and went, okay. She had a headline, she had a volume number, she had an issue date, she had all of these things on the top line. Then she had the headline, picture of the Boston Tea Party and the tea going over the side of the boat. And then she noticed she had a bottom that was empty. And she looks at and says, I can't do a newspaper with no bottom line. It doesn't look right. So she thought about her book. and she put a reward wanted for this missing pig thing on it. And when she turned it into the teacher, she goes, "You did a great job, but I don't understand this pig part." And Adara went, "It's in the book." And the teacher went, "No, it's not." Adara went and got the book, showed it to the teacher. It was in the second chapter of the book. Some farmer goes into a bar and says he's missing a pig, and he really wants it back.
Well, it sounds like you have found excellent ways of helping your kids through school, and I think that that's one of the critical things that we're seeing in this report. And also, just as parents and as concerned community members, we know that oftentimes you do have to go in and help teachers understand your child. And I think that it's important to remember, too, that I know that every year when my sons, especially when they got to junior high and high school, every year there was one teacher that they sort of didn't really get along well with. And so I would go to school, ask for a meeting with the teacher, with the principal, with my son, and we'd all sit down, and I referred to those as the UN Peace Summit negotiations, because I wanted everybody to have a good experience. The teacher that has to wrangle all these kids into class every day, my son, and the rest of the students. And so I went in there not loaded for bear, thinking that, you know, this has to be the teacher's fault or it's the school's fault. I went in there with an open mind and said, what can we do to help all of you have a good experience through this year so that my son learns, the teacher doesn't have a migraine every day, and the other students are also getting a fair shot at what they need to know. And without fail, it worked every single year. There was never another call. There was never trouble. We figured it out, and they went on and you know, my son's made it through school just fine. So I think that Kathy touched on some important issues. We're going to take a quick call now from Carl in Homer, who wants to talk about maritime education. Hi, Carl.
Hello. Thanks for the program. I'll give you a little bit of history first. I've spent 20 years traveling the coast of Alaska, deep sea fishing on conventional longliners. I've also been a high school soccer coach here in Homer. And I also have taught and built wind turbines and solar trackers with the Job Corps kids out of Palmer. So I've worked with a lot of kids that are in that program. And to give you, for instance, a lot of the kids, when they show up to set up a wind turbine, they're not allowed to have knives, let alone any hand tools, so to speak. So they're coming to the program without any hand skills. And because, you know, knives are dangerous, they don't let the kids in schools have knives. So I've got to start with teaching kids how to safely use a knife to open up the boxes. They don't know what a simple hand tools are because they don't have any hands-on experience with them. Mm. So I think we can address that with developing a program that would benefit the state in the maritime sciences. If we could develop a sailing school ship that all the schools and universities could get behind to be a support vessel for the Sukalak, the brand new UAF research, state-of-the-art research vessel that's been launched and it'll be up here in Alaska and hopefully home ported and Seward here next year. But this is an excellent opportunity for us in Alaska to develop a maritime program and tie into our school systems. And have a shipbuilding, a boat building program. What we can do in our smaller communities is build support vessels that demonstrate renewable energy that can tie together our schools with the ocean sciences and boat building. And to give you, for instance, in New Zealand, which is a lot like Alaska, they're kind of remote and isolated. In the early 90s, they started a vocational boat building program, and now they have over 200 apprenticeships. And New Zealand is renowned around the world for building yachts and boats of all kinds and shipping them all over the world. And here in Alaska, with us being such a maritime state with all this coastline and harsh, extreme environments, the only state with an ice edge, and for us to have a competition between Kodiak and Homer and Seward to build polar expedition class vessels that are small enough, you know, 65 foot about, to engage in polar activities and have the kids toe the line. If you want to be on this boat, you know, you have to, you know, have certain standards
some
in
skills.
Your aptitude.
Absolutely. Carl, I love your idea. I love to that's why I think that it's important for us to engage communities around the state about this idea of how can we get creative. I think it's a fantastic idea to start marrying up the marine sciences and ocean sciences in the classrooms and using the fact that we have more coastline than any other place in the nation and that we're an Arctic state and bringing these things into classrooms and helping young people figure out how they can understand the context of what their future work can be. We're talking about student education. I want to bring my guests back in for a minute. We've got a lot of callers on the line, but let's get our guests, Andrew Helcrow and June Sobosinski, back in here. The hands-on activities that we're talking about, teachers say that these activities are better than the sit-and-get style of traditional teaching. This seems like an area, as Carl mentioned, that the community could really help. Are there programs that the United Way is considering or tracking, and maybe the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, that are examples of this hands-on learning approach, or is that maybe the next step in what might be developed? June?
Well, I would identify first that I don't think it's our, we as community partners, it's not our core or essential role to be looking at how curriculum is delivered inside the classroom. So I want to kind of get that out up front. However, I do think that there are ways when there's a recognition that more hands-on, more practical learning experiences in the classroom would enhance student outcomes, then absolutely we would be at the table and are at the table to try to figure out more ways to accomplish that. So a couple of examples do come to mind. One of the partnerships within our broad outcome-based partnership, 90-20-20, is we're working very hard to try to engage the business community in just a multitude of levels. One of those levels exists already, and we're going to try to leverage it even further, but it's the school business partnership. Mm. So I'll give you one example of hands-on learning and relevance to career and so forth. You know, oftentimes a business or an organization will adopt a school. So one of the business partners, I believe it's Siemens Engineering, is partnered up with an elementary school in South Anchorage. I believe it's Rabbit Creek. Mm-hmm. And they do this wonderful, you know, sort of year-long learning in partnership with the school, and it's an egg drop. So the students learn, you know, sort of the physics behind what's going to happen when you drop an egg from the top of a crane. And it's perfect example of those kinds of real-life things being brought into the classroom. It's very hands-on.
I think that that's the more relevant you can make education to the future of someone's life, I think the better off we all are. We're going to take another call here from Sarah in Anchorage, who is, Sarah's gone. All right, we will take a call from Haynes, who is in Willow. Hi, Haynes, you wanted to talk about domestic violence impacts in families.
Right. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I'm a father of two. I've been and lived just about everywhere in the state, and I've seen firsthand, you know, domestic violence, you know, within homes and its effect. I don't work in the education industry at all, I'm not a psychologist, but I do know that there's that fight or flight instinct that's, you know, genetic within human beings. And when a child is present to abuse or domestic violence in a home, it actually shuts down the frontal cortex of their brain and inhibits their ability to learn and actually builds their ability to defend themselves. And it sounds very strange, but it can be shown pretty early on a child's behavior and how they act within a school system. And, you know, and by no means is raising a child easy, and it's very complex and has many different facets and a lot of ways to screw it up. But, you know, I would say that one key step, in my personal opinion, in Alaska, especially since we have such a high rate of domestic violence, it is to start working within the family structure and get these kids in a safe family environment, so that way they have the ability to take in and comprehend the things that they're learning at school. It seems that the problem is statewide, and I think the further you get out from the most populated regions, the worse it gets. And I'm sure there's a lot of different things at play, everything from culture to long winters, and, you know, strife financially. But all in all, you know, it's a problem that needs to be addressed. And I think that there's steps that are being done. But I think we need to grab the bull by the horns and really, you know, tackle this one, nip it in the behind, so to speak. Sooner than later.
I absolutely agree, Haynes. I really believe that our high, you know, the dubious distinction of being top in the nation for domestic violence, sexual assault of women is one of the biggest issues facing our state. And we can't grow and attract great professional women and families here. We can't help our kids in school until we address those issues. We are talking about how we can help students, and we're going to take one more quick break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about enhancing student learning and performance as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
There's a good feeling you get when you give, and each year more Alaskans are supporting things they love when they file online for their PFD. Alaskans like you donated $2.5 million last year to strengthen education, help families in need of food and shelter, and protect the most vulnerable among us. You even shared your permanent fund dividends with public radio to keep quality programming alive and well. This year, the PFD is expected to be a lot bigger. So come on, love Alaska. Pick, click, give. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Today we're talking about a statewide survey that was recently released, Enhancing Student Learning and Performance. My guests are Andrew Helcro, president of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and June Sobosinski, vice president of Education Impact for the United Way. We were just talking about the impact of domestic violence in homes and on children, and unfortunately for kids who are experiencing this, what is common becomes normal. And if that's your experience every day, if you're experiencing violence in a home, you think that's normal. And it does impact your ability to really take in and experience your learning on a level that we really would want for children. Andrew, you had some thoughts after our last caller about this issue.
I do. And I believe that this plays a significant role in inhibiting student learning. And as June said earlier, the challenge with education is people like to cherry pick data. And part of the frustration is you hear policymakers say, oh, your graduation rate's only X. Well, if the ASD is graduating 77% in 4 years and then graduating, it bumps up to 80% in 5 years. The question's never been asked, what's going on with those 20%? I mean, we can complain about 77 or 80% all day, but until you look at that 20%, you really have no idea. And when you look at Alaska, I'm surprised that policymakers haven't figured out that in a state with the highest rates of domestic violence and alcohol and drug abuse, that does not affect the student and trickle down into learning. The state statistics show that the number of three-year-olds witnessing violence against a parent is up like 80% in the last 2 or 3 years. So it's happening out there. And the frustration is then these kids show up for school. They struggle through the system, and at the end of the day, not only does the student have learning issues, but the schools and the teachers get the blame. In my daughter is a corrections officer at Wildwood Corrections Facility, and she sees women coming in, young women, all the time. And you'd be absolutely amazed at why they're there in their previous life and their struggles and their challenges, and the data bears that out.
I'd like to get one more call in. We're going to talk with Jana Lee in Ketchikan, who has a comment about adopted children struggling in school. Jana Lee?
Hi. Yes, I'm Jana Lee, and I'm originally born and raised in Ketchikan, and I've had the pleasure of living from Kotzebue, where I did the adult program GED examiner, all the way down to Kenai. And what I found, and I have three kids I've adopted, what I found very hard was I want to give a shout out to Ketchikan High School and the school district, because when it comes to an IEP, they don't care if you have an IEP or not. If you need the help, you get the help you need. And I found that this to be a huge problem, not with Kotzebue, but with the Kenai District, with, you know, IEPs getting lost and not getting taken care of and done in a timely fashion, to where students are failing and almost being run out of school. Hmm. And my youngest daughter was one of those. And when I moved her to Ketchikan, she's now a straight-A student. But to have to go through that struggle, to give her that strength, and show her, you know, so she has that self-esteem built back up, is extremely hard. And of course, you know, that what I found even in the adult education program was a lot of kids where there's no structure in the home. And I had rules and there was structure, and I don't care how old you are. Even in high school, your kids need to go to bed at a decent hour. 9 o'clock, lights out. They have to get up at 6. They have to be at school. If you want them not to be, you want them to get to school and be able to do what they need to do, then they need 9 hours, 8 hours of sleep.
Well, thank you. Thank you for those comments, Jenilee. You're right. We've only got a couple minutes left here, but we keep coming back to this theme about the importance of parent involvement, community involvement. Children need to know people care and that they do want to see them succeed into the future. There's a whole lot of questions that remain to be asked about this survey. It's very comprehensive. But in our final moments here, I'd like a comment from each of you about what you hope lawmakers will do. Andrew, you alluded to a bit about policymakers kind of taking in the information that needs to come out of understanding these domestic violence incidents in homes and how that impacts children. What would you hope that policymakers take away from this survey, Andrew?
Well, I would hope that they look at this data and realize that they have to do more than simply look at graduation rates. This is a complex. Anchorage is a perfect example. We're becoming an international community, and you have cultures that are growing here, emerging here in Anchorage, that have all kinds of barriers that lawmakers need to understand. In part of my personal frustration is in Juneau, they are discussing the largest changes to education in the history of Alaska, and they're not doing it with one shred of relevant data. That's a problem.
And June, what would you like our state lawmakers to take away from the results of this survey?
I'd like to end where I began, I think, in so far as we have an enormous opportunity. Alaska being the relatively small, in some ways, state that it is, to look at the education environment with a lot of wisdom. And I appreciate the governor's putting it out there on the table and saying, this is an education year. Let's really focus on education. But in doing so, I guess I'd call for a look at the three buckets. I would call the three buckets. Let's really look comprehensively at our data, at what research tells us, and at this important element of informed opinion from all the constituents in order to get to the right outcomes for our kids.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Andrew Halcrow, President of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, June Sobosinski, Vice President of Education Impact for the United Way. Dave Waldron has been our engineer. I'm Lori Townsend. Next week, Ellen Lockyer will be here to host Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.